Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will take a look at why last week was rough for United Airlines, while I see how Tony Douglas is getting on with setting up Riyadh Air.
I'll look at a pretty chilling incident that happened in the air over the Tasman Sea, while Joe looks at airline plays plans for the future.
Finally, Tom will explore the good luck tradition delaying flights in China.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And I wanted to start this week by looking at United Airlines because it's been a pretty rubbish week for them regarding aircraft incidents. And we have seen everything from an aircraft park smashing a parked car to an incident that's been referred to some as Tokyo Drift. So by my count, there have now been six different United Airlines incidents within the space of a week.
That's not a good look.
I know. Two of them involving hydraulic systems, but things actually started on March 4th. So two of the airline's aircraft simultaneously, not simultaneously in that it happened at the same time, but on the same day, experienced engine failures. So first up, we had a Boeing 737-900 operating flight 1118 had to return to Houston. So a passenger who was on this board this flight reportedly, he shared photos of flames coming out of the left-hand engine on Twitter. Not a great start, but it continued. So on the same day, a United Boeing 757 experienced an engine failure over the Pacific Ocean. This was a flight from Honolulu to San Francisco, and on this one, the right-hand engine failed. But as the incident happened around 4 hours into a five-hour flight, the pilots proceeded to their intended destination on the left-hand engine, as I guess this was the closest airport anyway. Next up, on March 7th, a United Boeing 777 bound from San Francisco to Okasa Kansai International in Japan had an issue. So instead of flying to Okasa Kansai, the aircraft flew to Los Angeles International, turning this international flight into a domestic one. But why did it end up just flying down the West Coast? Well, after the aircraft took off, one of the aircraft's main landing gears fell off shortly after takeoff, and it crushed a car. Luckily, there was no one in the car, because if you look at photos of this car, you know, it looks like it's been in a serious accident. This must have just walloped it, and these tires are not small things either.
They're huge things, aren't they?
Yeah, they're huge and they're heavy. It's lucky there was no one involved. The next incident occurred just a day later, and this was on March 8th. This time, a United Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 8 was involved, and I think the aircraft type really boosted the profile of this incident, but it seemed to be an incident that happened with a 737 MAX 8 rather than an incident that happened because it was a 737 MAX 8. So give Boeing a little bit of credit, because I know they've had a lot of bad news recently. But basically, this aircraft ended up resting in the grass on the end of runway 27 at Houston's George Bush Intercontinental Aircraft. And it looks basically that the aircraft kind of just took the corner a bit too fast when vacating the runway. This is why people have been describing this one as Tokyo Drift, which I found was a nice little lightening of the mood on that one. Also, on the same day, a United Airlines Airbus A320 bound for Mexico City took off from San Francisco with 105 passengers on board. And like the 777 incident, this international flight also became domestic and also diverted to Los Angeles International. This one did make it outside of US airspace first, though, unlike the other one. But the diversion was prompted by issues with the hydraulic system. But speaking of issues with hydraulic systems, according to our friends over at AeroTime, a Boeing 777 also had issues with hydraulics on Monday, March 11th. So this plane had just taken off from Sydney when it experienced an issue and declared an emergency over the Tasman Sea before returning to Sydney, where it was met by emergency services. So, as far as I'm aware, thankfully nobody was hurt in any of these incidents, and I guess it does seem a bit concerning that all six were United incidents within the space of a week, but, you know, I think it could be perhaps it was coincidental that they were United, because it was kind of under a bit more focus because of everything that's going on, because, you know, there's always incidents like this happening all around the world.
I think that's it. I mean, I remember Qantas went through a bit of a spate of incidents. I think it was about halfway through last year. But it was around the time that there was all this furore about Alan Joyce leaving, you know, so people were looking for Qantas news. And I think those stories just kind of got more traction because people were generally looking for information on Qantas. But very unfortunate for United. It doesn't look good when you're every other day being reported in the press as having a problem. But I think I agree with you, Tom. It's probably just coincidence. And not a signal of any underlying issues. Let's hope so anyway. So from something old to something new, I wanted to talk about Riyad Air, which is one of the more exciting startups we've got on our radar. Not due to launch until next year, but that doesn't mean they're not hard at work. And the CEO of the airline, Tony Douglas, was at the CAPA conference last week in Granada, and so was I.
Who else was there? Yeah.
Me. So I definitely had to grab him for a quick one-to-one chat, and we had a really good conversation about what's going on. But it was interesting to hear his own personal experience of trying to get from Riyadh to Granada, where the conference took place. You know, even just getting to a major airport in Spain involved multiple connecting flights and transiting through Dubai. And I think, you know, that kind of underscores the business proposition for the airline and the reason that Riyadh needs its own airline. But for Tony, you know, he was at Etihad for a long time. He was in Abu Dhabi. But he said he loves living in Riyadh. He said it's a great city, full of energy. That's kind of unsurprising, given that the population, actually two-thirds of Saudi's population is now under the age of 30. So these are what we call digital natives. You know, they've grown up with the internet. And that's something that Tony's definitely taking into consideration as he's starting to form Riyadh Air. Digital technology will all be at the heart of this airline. He alluded to some really exciting stuff going on. For example, super fast Wi-Fi in the cabin, immersive IFE, AI-powered check-in. He wouldn't be drawn on any specifics or any suppliers for these technologies at this point, but said there'd be lots of new announcements later on this year. Another thing that he's often said quite frequently is how the airline is targeting 100 destinations within 5 years. That's quite ambitious, but, you know, where are these destinations going to be? Well, he said there's not really going to be any big surprises in there. There's a definite focus on obviously Europe, North America, and destinations in the Far East. You can imagine the cities that he'll be targeting in Europe. Like I say, he says there'll be no surprises. He didn't want to list them all, but it will be pretty much every major city and maybe a couple of secondary airports. North America, they're looking more at the northeastern seaboard. I'm not sure the Dreamliners they've got on order can make it much further than that. But they'll also be looking at the principal cities in Canada as well. In the other direction, capital cities in the Far East and India are definitely on the radar, as well as some Central Asian destinations. But there will, of course, also be a very robust domestic operation. Apparently, Riyadh to Jeddah is one of the busiest routes in the world, and I didn't know that. But Riyadh Air will be fulfilling some of that demand with narrow bodies, which, of course, we are still waiting for an announcement about. The smart money is on the 737 MAX being their airplane of choice. In typical Tony fashion, he would neither confirm or deny the MAX interest, but said he's aware that most people think that they'll go for Boeing, but he does like to keep some surprises up his sleeve. His words were, "It's not over till it's over." I remember him saying something similar to me about the A380 back in the day. Anyway, it's he's still keeping his cards close to his chest on that one. But what the airline has already ordered, as previously mentioned, is the 787 Dreamliner. I asked him if he was concerned about getting the aircraft in time to facilitate the growth that it needs. He admitted there are still some challenges for the OEMs, but he said that actually as part of the selection criteria for their wide bodies, the airline stipulated that the delivery schedules must be met. In fact, they said if there are any nasty surprises or any bad news to share, we have to be at the front of the queue for the next thing because we just don't have any fallback. And, you know, you can imagine as a startup, you can hardly kind of shuffle your fleet around to mitigate late arriving aircraft deliveries because there is no fleet. But, you know, he said he's as confident as he can be. More broadly on the issues at Boeing, he was remembering back to when he was a manufacturing director at British Aerospace. And he said, you know, back then, all the engineers in aerospace looked up to Boeing as being the gold standard. But, you know, they've had a lot of bad press around the MAX. However, he was quick to note this isn't a MAX issue. all of these things are a quality management issue at Boeing, which we've talked about enough on this podcast, really. But his belief is that they need to just put everything else on ice and really focus on getting this right. Everything else goes on the back burner until it's sorted. And he described it, you know, as being the wake-up call of all wake-up calls. But absolutely in his heart, hopes that Boeing will get back to being the symbol of integrity that it once was. But I just wanted to kind of wrap up here by just saying, Tony was so enthusiastic for this new airline. And you can see, you know, he was parachuted into Etihad to fix issues that somebody else caused. He did a great job of fixing those issues. He ticked all the boxes, got all the goals done. But now he gets to do his very own airline from a clean sheet. And he's like a kid in a candy store. You know, you can see the eagerness to get all these contracts signed and get everything right for his new airline. He described it as an incredible experience, and he joked to me that he'd be happy to bring to it the only qualification I think I've got, and that's a PhD in how not to do it. He did also say that this isn't just another Middle East vanity airline. He said, you know, PIF, the investment fund that are backing it, is a red-blooded capitalist, and financial rigor will be built in from the start. This year, we're not going to see any flying. Of course, this is what he's calling the year of readiness. Well, everything's being put into place to enable a successful pivot to an operational airline next year. I know some people are on the fence about Riyadh Air, but I'm really right behind them. I love Tony Douglas, and I love this whole idea of the airline. And I think, you know, particularly with PIF behind them, maybe they're already too big to fail.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it will be really interesting just to see an airline start with a big bang, for one. It's not a great term for an aviation, but, you know, like, really sort of go all in. It will be interesting to see how it works compared to the usual model of we'll start with one plane, buy another plane
next
et cetera,
year,
et cetera.
Yep. Launch a second destination in 2 years' time.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll watch the space and see what happens, as we love to on this podcast. Are you ready for a great segue?
Go on then. Let's hear it.
So my last United Airlines incident that I talked about took place over the Tasman Sea between Australia and New Zealand. And my next story also took place over this body of water.
Oh.
So it's a bridge segue over your piece. But, you know, so at least 50 passengers were injured aboard a LATAM Airlines flight between Sydney, Australia and Auckland, New Zealand, because of a technical malfunction that occurred during this Fifth Freedom flight. Thankfully, this 787-9 did eventually safely land in Auckland, but according to the New Zealand Herald and quoting a LATAM Airlines representative, the Boeing 787-9 that was registered as Charlie Charlie Bravo Golf Golf suffered a technical problem mid-flight. The aircraft landed at Auckland Airport as scheduled, but what is a technical problem in flight? Can't exactly say what that is. You know, I'm trying to think exactly what happened, but we can kind of gauge a bit on what people have been saying about the thing. But let's start by talking about the immediate aftermath and then go into more what has happened. So, speaking to Simple Flying, a member of the Hato Hone St. John Ambulance Service said that it had to respond to an incident with this inbound aircraft, and it had to deploy 14 units to this flight, including 7 ambulances, 2 operation managers, 2 major incident support team vehicles, 1 command unit, and 2 rapid response vehicles. They told us that our ambulance crews assessed and treated approximately 50 patients, with 1 patient in a serious condition and the remainder in a moderate to minor condition. 12 patients were transported to hospital, and one of them was in a serious condition. 1 patient went to the Auckland City Hospital in a moderate condition, and 1 was taken to the Starship Hospital in a moderate condition. All of the others ended up at the Middlemore Hospital. But it gets interesting when you start looking at what happened on the flight. So the New Zealand Herald shared a testimony from a passenger on board this flight, L800, and they said that the LATAM Airlines aircraft suddenly dropped during the 2.5-hour flight. I was watching, I went out of my way to watch the BBC report on this, and they were speaking to a passenger, and the passenger kind of described that they were kind of half asleep, but they were aware that something was going on, and they opened their eyes and just saw a passenger pinned on the ceiling.
Oh my goodness.
which, you know, it's not a good idea at all. Or it's not a good,
it's not a good idea. Yeah, don't go petting yourself on ceilings, passengers. Yeah. That's not a good idea.
It's not a good situation to be in.
No.
At all. I can't think what would cause an aircraft from a technical problem just to drop, other than the elevator suddenly going like that. But again, you know, we'll have to wait. I'm really interested to see what the investigation into this turns up. But in the meantime, a LATAM spokesperson told Simple Flying, following the cancellation of the flight, a new flight has been scheduled for the 12th of March, departing Auckland at 8 p.m. local time, bound for Santiago. The safety of our passengers and crew is our top priority, and affected passengers are being offered food and accommodation services due to the flight cancellation. So what about the aircraft? Well, according to CH Aviation data, Boeing delivered the 787 to LATAM on December 16th, 2015. So that's 13 days after the aircraft's first flight. It's an aircraft that's powered by two Rolls-Royce Trent 1000 engines. And until the end of December, it had accumulated 23,650 flight hours across 3,562 flight cycles. I'm, you know, watching to see what's happened here, because I, you know, it seems like it should be taken as a serious major incident in terms of what's happened.
I mean, when I first saw the headline, I assumed it was a horrible patch of turbulence or something, but they haven't mentioned turbulence once.
Exactly.
So it would sound more like a mechanical issue or, you know, some sort of operational disaster.
If it was really bad turbulence, it could really... But like, if you go between two air masses, you could end up with the plane being forced up or down.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't sound like that from what has been reported. So that's why I'm...
They've been very quick to say turbulence when things like this have happened before, and it was. So we'll have to wait. But the AAIB are very good at emailing me all their updated accident reports. So I shall watch
every Thursday.
Every Thursday. I shall watch my inbox eagerly for an update on that. So I wanted to talk about a different airline that I was also talking to at Kappa. So sorry I'm boring everybody, but I do love chatting to airline executives and hearing a bit more sort of behind the scenes about what's going on. So while Riyadh Air is looking to expand very quickly, there's another startup that kind of came about during COVID, and they have been a little bit more conservative, I guess, in the way that they've expanded their operations since. I am, of course, talking about Iceland's Play Airlines, which is kind of formed from the ashes of the now defunct WOW Air. And a lady called Sonja Arnesdotter is the CCO at Play. She is actually former WOW as well. Many Play members are former WOW, but she has been in aviation for a long time, and she did a lovely panel on stage about the hybridization of airlines. But of course, I had to grab her for a one-to-one chat. We talked to start with about how destinations are performing. You know, she said that North America has been very strong, but really on the leisure side, you know, they're not getting any business traffic. Obviously, with the Iceland stopover, it's not optimal, but very good for leisure travellers. There has been some disruption, and particularly in November and December due to the volcano. She blames the media for that, because there was actually no danger to aviation, to the airport, or to any of Play's customers. But because the media was kind of bigging it up a little bit, people were nervous and started cancelling flights. But she said they're starting to get back to normal now. I was interested to hear about their strategy of serving secondary airports, because they fly to places like Stewart instead of one of the big New York area airports. So they've also started serving Hamilton. Sonja admitted she was a bit nervous of these destinations because they're a little bit less well known. But actually, you know, both of them are performing very well. There are a lot of people within their local catchment area as well, which is capturing a lot of demand from the bigger airports. And of course, there's a lot less queuing. So for people who are arriving in the States, I mean, if you've ever flown into JFK at a busy moment, it can take 2 or 3 hours to get through immigration if you haven't got your pre-check or your clear in your hand. So that's another benefit for those. And it's actually just about an hour, hour and a half by road to get into New York City. So people are seeing the benefit of those secondary airports. She did admit that the transatlantic market in general is very high competition and very aggressive, and that players had to work extremely hard to keep its fares down. On the future plans and destinations, there will be more North American destinations coming up, but they are a bit wary of expanding too fast and falling into the same trap that WOW did. So, you know, everything is very much planned out and kind of playing out at a very kind of steady march, rather than, you know, going a bit too fast and then coming into problems. But there is a firm plan to integrate longer range A321neos into the fleet, specifically the LR and later on the XLR. And those will be able, will enable the airline to reach into places like Florida, the central USA, potentially even down to the Caribbean. Sonia also mentioned Montreal, which I think would be a great destination to see added to the map. But they do have to be careful with these longer routes, because as soon as you start getting into the territory of overnighting planes and crew rather than doing this out and back in a day that they do, it becomes much more complex and much more expensive. So I imagine they're going to continue to be fairly conservative on the destinations they add. So, of course, I'd spoken to Sonia about the LR and XLR, and she couldn't tell me when. So I asked the boss. I emailed my friend Birger Johnson, who's the CEO at Play, and he said that they're going to be operating around 18 to 20 aircraft by 2029, so about 5 years from now. They're going to start building their fleet from 2025. So for this year, we'll just see them with the same 10 airplanes they had last year. New ones are upcoming, though. And so the LR will probably be integrated in 2026. And he mentioned some destinations he was eyeing for that plane, Orlando, Seattle being in there. The XLR would come later and would probably be towards the end of that time frame. He mentioned they are already in negotiations with leases about all this, and that they'll use this year to get a clearer picture of the kind of delivery timeline and which destinations they'll open as these new aircraft come online. They've recently had a capital increase, which is intended to be used for this purpose. So it's all definitely happening and very exciting. On the European side, though, I got the impression that the competition was lower and the yields were better, and they seem a lot more enthusiastic about Europe. I mean, North America's still going on, but Europe seems to be Play's bread and butter. They very recently announced Madeira and Marrakesh, becoming the first Icelandic carrier to ever fly to Marrakesh. She explained that this was on the back of some pretty data-driven number crunching, looking at where people want to go and where they can sustain not just the Icelandic traffic going on holiday, but also that bilateral traffic of people coming to explore Iceland as well. Some destinations have performed really well for that, like Tenerife and Barcelona, for example, have got healthy two-way traffic. But there's going to be more destinations to announce in Europe for sure. But the last thing I wanted to mention was something I found quite interesting from a revenue management perspective. So in the wintertime, Play blocks out some of the seats on its A321neos. This is because they have a total of 214 seats. And so they block out enough to take it down to 200. And that lets them fly with one fewer cabin crew. Obviously, that reduced costs. And it is in the airline's opinion that they'd be very unlikely to fill all of those seats as paying passengers. So what they do with these blocked seats is they install a little like table like you get in Euro Business, and then you can upgrade to that seat either during your booking process or even on the day as you walk on the plane. Apparently they've got a little sticker saying, do you want to book me? I'm available for just a few euros. I asked about the price, and they usually charge, she said it is destination dependent, but she said it could be as little as 20 or 30 euros to basically get the same as BA's European business class, which I think is pretty cool. In the summer, of course, when traffic picks up, they can be easily removed. But I thought that was a really interesting way to tackle the kind of quieter winter months as an airline that's looking to keep its costs down. So, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be the next big thing for low-cost carriers, actually, because just today, Frontier Airlines announced that it's going to be blocking the middle seats of the first two rows of its aircraft for, I think, about $49 introductory price. again, you know, I'm not sure the reason they're doing that other than let's do something different. But it just, it blows my mind that this is like BA is selling this as a, and Lufthansa are selling this as like, this is business class. And now these low cost carriers are saying, oh yeah, we can offer it for $30, $40.
Yeah. It's very interesting to watch. I think it's a great strategy. And, you know, particularly given you can take a cabin crew member off if you know you're not going to have over that number of passengers. I mean, that's got to be a huge saving on a per flight basis.
Yeah. And I think, I wonder if like putting the middle seat table in is part of that, because I was always under the impression that it was the number of seats you had and not the number of seats you'd filled. Because I thought that was the problem Ryanair was having with adding the additional seats, but who knows?
I will look into it and get back to you, but it's
Let's find out next week.
To see anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't really have a good segue to my next point, so I might as well just dive in, unless you do.
I don't.
I guess you mentioned something old and something new with Riyadh Air. Well, something blue is China Southern Airlines, because that's the colour that they use. And one of their flights was delayed by over 4 hours last Wednesday after a passenger decided to toss a few coins into the aircraft's engine. Oh. I guess it should go without saying, do not throw coins into an aircraft's engine. The reason I believe this happened is that in China, it's an old and mostly harmless superstition that throwing coins into a well is good luck. And a few people have taken this to mean that throwing coins into an engine is good luck. But throwing coins into the engine is the opposite of good luck. It will just lead to bad consequences. So the incident is being reported by Chinese state media as involving flight CZ8805. And this is a 3-hour, 40-minute domestic flight from Sanya in the Hainan province to Beijing. The aircraft was scheduled to take off at 10 a.m. local time on March 6th, but the unlucky passengers were forced to wait until around 2:16 in the afternoon for the coins to be removed, when it finally got the green light to take off after maintenance staff conducted safety inspections. According to Flight Radar 24, this flight was operated by an A350-900 with Rolls-Royce Trent XWB-84 engines. The plane in question was just 1.33 years old, and according to data from CH Aviation, it first flew on November 8th, 2022. Interesting aside, I was looking at this route, and you know, most routes operated by Western carriers will be operated by a single type. You know, it will be a 777 route or an A350 route. It looks like everything flies on this route, from the 787 to the 350 to the 737 to 320s on this flight number. So I thought that was quite interesting in itself. Videos shared by multiple state media outlets show that a flight attendant was questioning the passenger who was responsible, asking how many coins they threw in the engine, and they got the answer 3 to 5. Airport police took the passenger away. It's unclear if or what any charges were brought against the individual or how much a potential fine will be. And China Southern Airlines did not reveal how many coins it did find in the engine. But what I found really interesting, like, I went on a massive wormhole looking into this as well. I found that China Southern on the same day posted a video to Weibo, which is the Chinese version of Twitter, telling passengers that they should not be throwing coins into the engine of an aircraft. If you're interested, and it's all in Chinese, but if you are interested, go on to simpleflying.com and have a look, because we've got the video on our article. But the airline lists all of the different punishments that those who throw coins into the engine could face. And these range from fines and a few days of detention all the way up to the highest penalties. So did you know that if throwing coins into an engine led to a catastrophic failure, perhaps leading to the death of passengers, those responsible could even face the death penalty in China?
Well, I shan't be throwing any coins into any aircraft engines in China or otherwise. So,
yeah, I think it's probably best policy just to avoid this in general. But
definitely,
this is far from the first time that they've actually had this problem in China. In 2019, a Chinese airline called Lucky Air sued an unlucky passenger for $21,000 for throwing coins into an engine. Police took away an elderly 80-year-old woman after throwing coins into a China Southern Airlines aircraft engine in 2017. We've also seen issues in October last year, in 2021, with China Southern Airlines and with GX Airlines. So I can understand the need for education.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we kind of do that in Europe as well. Like, people like to throw money into any bodies of water. Like, I don't know, the Trevi Fountain, I guess, is the most famous one. If you throw the coin in there, it's supposed to mean you're always going to go back. But you see, like, the fish at the garden centre are surrounded by tuppence pieces in the UK because people just think that's lucky. But yeah, let's not do it with aircraft engines, guys. That's not a very good idea.
Public service announcement.
definitely. Well, I think that's all we've got time for on today's podcast. We do hope you enjoyed it and welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.